Blog Talk Radio.
Welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, January 21st, 2011. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. And I am the head moderator for the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, th.org, a wonderful and loving community dedicated to the study of the Law of One and related topics. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted. That's 347-884-8770. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. And please visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com. That's waternurtureslife.com for information on high vibration, life-changing crystalline water. Medically certified in Japan, it is the missing piece to radiant health for wanderers and humans alike. That's waternurtureslife.com. When submitting questions, please keep your questions spiritual. And once again, I am Monica Liel, and I'm speaking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. Carla, did you have any question, any comments you'd like to start the show off with today?
Hey, Monica. I did actually have a couple things happen this week that I thought maybe the listeners would like to hear about. For one thing, it was the 30th anniversary of the first contact with those of Ra last Saturday night, and I got the biggest surprise. Jim and I were sitting here innocently having basically not figured out that it was the anniversary day and just going about our business. And before we had our public meeting, Gary and Renee, who are on the staff here, volunteers all, brought in a very big scrapbook with I don't know how many letters from people all around the world thanking Jim and me and Don, wherever he is traveling, as someone said, for the effort to do the rock contact and to make it available to everybody. And it was just the most incredibly delightful surprise. There were flowers involved. There was a study group in England that sent money for flowers and made a homemade card. Had a little eagle flying across with holding a little tag that said 30 years. It was absolutely wonderful. And along those same lines, as in our service, Jim's and my service, I don't know if I have shared this with you, Monica, and the listeners as well, but Gary, the admin for LNL Research, the one that everybody writes to when they write into LNL Research now, since I don't do that anymore, and the fellow that runs the Bring Forth website, Steve E. Steve and Gary got together and cooked up the idea of creating downloads for an inexpensive price, like $3 per download. And to create a download for each Ra session. After they get those done, then they'll start doing other sessions too, so that people could, you know, order Kuo sessions, whatever, and get, you know, the actual session, not anything that's edited. But on the end of it, after you listen to the session, what they wanted Jim and me to do was to comment on whatever we wanted to, whatever the session was. The most hilarious request that I had was from Steve, who said, "And please tell Carla and Jim that we don't want them editing and polishing what they have to say. We want it to sound like it was spontaneous. So Jim and I are going to do our best not to clean up our stuff." and comment about any and all, you know, that we want to. So there will be a little treat, some, you know, original material that isn't available anywhere else if they do the downloads. Hopefully that will make it a little bit more appealing. They were going to put it on before the session, and I said, absolutely not. I said, they have to listen to the whole session first. The important part is not what Jim and I said about the session. The important part is the session. So I'm excited. We got a fancy digital microphone for Jim and one for me, and it plugs into something in the next room because I destroy recorders, and it will record both of us. So I'm thrilled. So that's my news for this week. You got anything? How you been doing?
Oh, I'm doing really good, and we're definitely looking forward to those recordings. That would be, I know a lot of people on the forum have been talking about that, and they're looking forward to that. We did want to start something a little different this week. We'd like to start the show out with a reading from one of the transcripts. Speaking of the sessions, here is a recent transcript from Kuo, I believe, and this is from Christmas Day, this past Christmas. And Kuo says, "My sister, the weariness which spiritual seekers feel at this time is an artifact of the changing energy at the waning of light in third density and the dawning of light in fourth density. Fourth density light more and more interpenetrates third density light, and this light is loaded with information. It is the light of love and understanding. And the burden of information that it carries is heavy. It carries more truth than third density light. It carries more truth than third density can use comfortably. This means that those who are already awake and already seeking are now seeking under more of a strain than they might have, say, 30 or 40 years ago even, and certainly more than 100 or 200 years ago." I thought we'd start with this session. Carla, would you like to comment on this?
I would, just briefly. Well, if I can speak briefly, I'm not sure that that's part of my repertoire. But at any rate, I picked this out, Monica. It is a Kuo session. I picked this out because, well, for one thing, it's recent. Nobody's seen it yet, and I thought everybody'd like that. But The gal was asking about why things were so hard right now, and that she just felt as if she was up against it for the last couple of years, and it was just not lifting. And the quote suggests, well, it's not going to lift. This is the end of third density. This is your last incarnation, and the light is waning. It's just about out, and so it's harder for us to make our choice, for us to maintain that choice of service to others. And, you know, I was thinking about this. The reason I picked it out is that I'm an old gal. I'm 67, so I was around 30 and 40 years ago and 50 years ago. And I remember back in the 50s, you know, people say movies were different then. They don't make things like that anymore. They say times were simpler, and they were. Movies were different because we were different. We were still floating along in the little bubble of, I guess, ignorance and bliss that was third density before the end became nigh. It was a simpler time because the light was third density light. It was a gentle light. It kept many secrets. It showed whatever you wanted to see. Nowadays, when we work with our energy bodies, when we clear those energy bodies, when we are seeking guidance, we are doing so, many of us older people, older than, say, 30, are doing this with strictly third-density DNA. We don't really have the DNA to handle fourth-density light. Now, if we've been trying to live by fourth-density values for a long period of time, it's exponentially easier. I don't know whether that kind of thinking over a period of time changes the DNA or whether it's just a matter of the discipline of the personality to where you begin to penetrate the veil because of the way that you're living. But it is much harder now. And I just want to encourage everybody to realize that we came here for a very important reason. And the fact that it's tough doesn't mean that when we get through this duty and graduate from third density, we won't look back on this and feel this was our finest hour. What we need to do when things seem chaotic and when things seem difficult and challenging and when it feels like the news is full of nothing but bad news, we need to settle down, reach for our faith, remember that things are all right, and be serene and have our peace so that when people are around us, they feel that peace, they feel that love, they feel that open heart. And they will feel that either consciously or subconsciously, it just depends on the person and his level of sensitivity, as a beacon of light. And they'll want more of that. So let that light and love shine through you. Don't worry about the small stuff and just be agents of love. That would be my comment. So this is my first time of trying to take Mr. Saul's advice. He's a very sophisticated radio guy that was trying to hire me to do satellite radio. And he said, you've got to start with a rant. Well, you see, I don't really have any axe to grind. I mean, I'll be glad to answer a question that anybody has. But so I thought, well, what better way to start a rant than to let the Confederation take that ball? So this is my first try at that, and you guys will have to let me know if you like it. So, Monica, we got any questions tonight?
We do. Our first one is from Mauricio. Mauricio says, Shalom, Monica and Carla. I am from Colombia. Thank you for your service. It is so wonderful to feel the love of the Creator flow to you. It has been life-changing for me and my family to know about the Law of One. My question is about 2012 and 4D changes. You have said that in order to go to 4D, people on Earth will have to die. But there are billions of people here, and every day more are being born. It has to stop the births in some point. Otherwise, it will be an unending situation, and least that 3D Earth will continue to function. Although, according to Ra, this situation is not possible at the beginning of 4D, and in the case that no shift in the physical sense happens in 2012, I think it has to be a change at least from the controller point of view. Now, he does say at the end, pardon my English, so I'm not quite sure if I'm translating this correctly here. There has to be a change at least from the controller point of view, a mean with 4D positive light in here. The service to self-oriented shouldn't be able to function in here and all their apparatus, bases, UFOs, etc. I mean, I think some changes need to happen in the 3D common life here on Earth before death. Well, this was a very long question. I hope you can add some light and love to this situation. Pardon my English. Shalom.
Thank you, Mauricio. It's not a simple question that you asked, and it's one that I get over and over again. How in the world can fourth density happen if third density doesn't stop? I think that the model that they're using is that we have one Earth, and at the end of first density, it became second density, and somehow that was okay. We could still see fourth density, and we could still see first. Then third density happened. We could still see the first density of the elements and the second density of the plants and animals, still see that. Fourth density happens, and they look down. They could still see third density, second density, and first density. Now, those are no longer the active densities. Those are no longer receiving first density, second density, or third density light. And light is very important here because density has to do with the density of the photon. What makes up the photon is different in each density. And the key to understanding how this all works is that the densities are nested. Like those little nesting dolls that you can get from Russia that have a big doll and then you take the top, the head of the doll off and there's another whole doll inside and you take her head off and there's a littler doll. And sometimes it goes on for five or six little dolls from the largest one to the very, very smallest one. And they're nested together. They don't get in each other's way and they all occupy the same space. I'm not saying this is exactly how it is, but I think it's about as close an example as you're going to find in 3D Earth. But once you get that key, you realize first density Earth keeps right on going, second density Earth keeps right on going, third density Earth keeps right on going, and fourth density Earth is the active density. It's using fourth density light. First, second, and third densities are now getting fourth density light, and that's what this was about, the quote that I just commented on. So here's the way I think it's going to be, and I could be wrong. I definitely could be wrong. As a matter of fact, a lot of people think I'm wrong, but this feels right to me. I believe that third density will go merrily onward. It will not have the benefit of third density light. It will not be the active density. And I think in a period of somewhere between 400 and 1,000 years, the Ra group was very indeterminate on that, just very vague. I believe that there will be no more souls wanting to incarnate on third density Earth, because the only reason to incarnate on third density Earth now is the reason that most kids are being born right now. Most everybody that is being born on Earth today has already graduated, has, in other words, has come to the end of their physical existence on Earth, has died, walked the steps of light, graduated to fourth density. So now they get to plan their first fourth density incarnation. And what do you think they do? They're looking for ways to serve, and they keep thinking of Earth and the terrible things that we've done to the planet. And maybe they're, you know, they have a history, a genetic history of being a Martian or being from Moldek or being an Atlantean, someplace where they pretty much destroyed the ground that they're living on. It made it uninhabitable to third density, either by destroying all the oxygen on the planet like Mars did, or blowing up the planet like Moldek did, or as the Atlanteans did, sinking their continent. So they're thinking to themselves, you know, I had that adhering karma when I came into third density. I just don't feel like I've turned back and given back to Mother Earth, to Gaia, or Gaia, whichever way you want to say it. And so they think, I'm going to do an incarnation or two just working with the planet, just trying to heal the damage that we have done to the earth, to the sky, you know, the air, the water. We've done some terrible things with our sophisticated machinery and our technology. It just didn't take into account that the earth is a living system and that, you know, we need very much to cooperate with the earth and not rape it. So I think that the people that are coming in now are people that have a much thinner veil and are capable of using fourth density light as well as third density light. So they're going to be fine. But I think that it won't be long, it won't be more than a few hundred years before that restitution is done to the best of everybody's ability, and there will no longer be a big pull to come back to third density Earth and work with it, and people will start looking elsewhere in the creation that where people need help in order to perform the service to others in fourth density. But for now, I think third density Earth will probably go right along. I do think that the shift of densities is a metaphysical event rather than a physical event, in that in space-time here, in our local space and our local time, the consensus reality that we all share, we won't see anything happen. But it is, that doesn't make it less real. It's a very real event. It's definitely going to click over just like the clock, you know, striking the hour. It's going to be fourth density. And in fact, it virtually is. I mean, when you have a period of 76,000 some odd years, and then you're talking about a year until the deadline, you know that a lot has begun already, because it's a gradual process. So you have a lot of people that have already had their last incarnation on Earth and have graduated. And when our physical vehicles are worn out and we need to drop them, we'll just move on in our energy bodies. We'll walk the steps of light in them. And then if we have graduated, and of course we all firmly intend to keep our heart open so we can graduate, then we will be in the next density, the density of love and understanding. And it will be a very, very interesting change. I look forward to it. But I want to stay until I can't stay anymore. You know, I am so enthusiastic about the opportunity that we have right now. I think we're so close to a tipping point, if not at the tipping point, where this kind of information goes viral. And it's just infecting all the grassroots under the radar, and people are waking up in droves and seeking and finding the light and the love of the infinite creator. And I am not leaving until I have given absolutely every breath of my body to help those people that are awakening right now, because I love every one of you guys.
Wonderful. And we can tell that you do, Carlin. We really appreciate you so much. To our listeners, please call in. We would love to hear your voice. We really, really, really would love to hear your voice. Please call us at 347-884-8770, 347-884-8770, and press the 1 key to join the show. We have another question submitted through the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org from InfoPerson9, who says, "I am a Russian IRA. For several months, learning materials from Ra, the Law of One, I've been practicing meditation. Question for the instrument, Carla, how are you in a trance? Similar to whether the state entering into a trance state with self-hypnosis? How did you feel, think, called, asked when entering a trance state? What can you recommend to achieve a trance state? Thank you."
Okay. I figured out all on my own, sitting here listening to the question, that IRA must mean an immigrant with resident status, right? At any
Good,
rate,
I'm glad
welcome.
You figured that out, because I had no idea. I was hoping you knew.
Well, I was just, you know me, I've always got to try to figure it out. But if you are indeed an immigrant to the United States, I hope that you're enjoying it here, that you've found the freedom that you have sought, and welcome. Welcome to our beautiful country. About trance, first of all, I'm the last person to ask about how you go into trance, because I did it so clumsily. I never knew how I did it. The only practice I ever had in growing into trance was that a friend of mine, Elaine Flaherty, died at the age of 39. I was about her age, as a matter of fact, when this happened. And she had promised her husband Tom and her son Mike that she would let them know how things were on the other side and let them know that she was okay. So after she died, she had juvenile diabetes, and she was lucky to live as long as she did, actually. She was always being expected to die by the doctors, and she did the best she could to prove them wrong, but eventually the disease got her. her body and her soul went on to larger life. So Tom, of course, was very eager for me to try to contact her, and I'd never done anything like that. I'd always been striving for the highest and best and being very particular about who I contacted as far as the channeling went. But, I mean, these are old friends. I'd met them, you know, 15 years before, and we'd done tons of stuff together, a lot of meditating, a lot of service together. And I just couldn't say no to Tom, so I said I'd try. And I sat down and basically went to sleep. And then when I woke up, they were all excited and saying it was Elaine on the tape, and they played the tape back, and it sounded like Elaine. It didn't sound like me. And I did that for him once more. It was very tiring for me. It was exhausting. And I asked him, is that enough? Because I'd rather not do this. You know, it's really hard on me. So he said, yeah, that was enough. He had what he wanted. He had proof that she was okay and proof that life does go on. So that was my only experience with trance before one day I was teaching channeling to a student named Leonard. And Don was the other person in the circle. And when I challenged the spirit, I got that it was Ra. And I challenged Ra three times, very firmly, you know, in the way I challenge, which is to ask them to say that Jesus is Lord. I figure if they come in on the vibration of Jesus the Christ, I'm in good hands and I'll take the call. If they can't pass the challenge, I won't. And that saved me no end of trouble, I'm sure. But at any rate, the Ra group had no trouble with it all. Of course we come in the name of Jesus the Christ. Jesus is King of Love. Love is the Logos. You know, no problem there. And so I said, okay. Well, that was about the last thing I remember. I went to sleep. And when I woke up, we had a session, which they wouldn't let me listen to for the first 23 sessions because Don was a scientist. He didn't want to screw up the information, so he didn't let me listen to it so it wouldn't pollute the experiment. This drove me crazy. But at any rate, that's all I ever did was go to sleep. So that is not the way to do trance, and I can prove it because, you know, if you do trance rightly, you don't lose 2 to 3 pounds when you've done an hour to an hour and a half session. And that's what I did all the way through the raw contact. I never ate so much in my life, and I couldn't get above 85 pounds. So, and it's not a good idea to do that. I don't care how good it sounds to people who are trying to lose a little weight. Not the way to do it. So, the second part of the question, who do I go to learn to do trance? Go to a spiritualist medium. The Spiritualist Church is international. It's in Britain, it's in America, I think it's all over the world. There are centers of spiritualist teaching here and there, and I'm sure if you get on the net and surf around, you'll find one that meets your needs. It's important to learn this from someone who is skilled and who can support you as senior medium while you're learning so that you're not trying to do this on your own. Do not do this by yourself. That is the most risky way to do it. It's risky because it's a crowded universe, and when you're trying to make contact with entities whom you cannot see or sense in the normal way, you can get fooled. And the negative side of things is extremely good at distraction and trickery. They will trick you, they will distract you, they will move you off of your positive orientation if they can. So you don't want to get one of those guys on the line. They're very persistent once they find you. So it's very important that you learn how to do the channeling, however you want to do it, from a senior channel or a senior medium whom you trust, respect, and feel complete comfort in working with. So shop around and find yourself a group, find yourself a spiritualist group, because they specialize in trance, and they do it very well. And do not be dismayed if you first find two or three or even four sources that you don't feel are quite on the up and up. That's standard. Anything having to do with psychic stuff is a place where a lot of charlatans will go. And that doesn't mean that the real thing isn't out there, too. So I investigated spiritualist seances with Don in the early 70s, and we probably went to 8 seances before we found a good materialization medium. And then we went back to him until he stopped coming to the area because he was very evidential. So I recommend the spiritualist groups. They're earnest, they're honest, and they're good.
Okay, wonderful. We have our next question from Nabil Nasser. Hello, Carla. I know that you've invested a great amount of energy in communicating the teachings of Ra to us. My question is, how do you feel about the website that was created to discuss their teachings? I've noticed that there seems to be a great deal of emphasis on conspiracy theories and ideas that are based on fear and negativity. Do you think that this is helpful in sharing what we have learned from Ra? Thank you. Love and peace.
Hey, Nabo, it's good to hear your voice and feel your energy. I do think that Bring Forth, I imagine that's the website you're talking about, is a good website, and I do think that it is useful for people to be able to bring up whatever they want to bring up, not just to talk about that instead of the Law of One, but to look at it through the lens of the Law of One. And people have to start talking about something, and the most outrageous, outlandish, and startling things tend to get your attention first. And so naturally they're going to be talking about the insectoids or the reptilians or the hidden hand, or, you know, they're going to hear all this buzz. And they're looking for people to talk about it with, to find out some way to get a grip, you know, because you just have too much information out there and it's all swirls together in your head and, you know, what's a seeker to do? You know, he needs to talk with some people that might have a clue. And when somebody comes to the Bring Forth Forum and says, well, what do you think about the reptilians? Well, what do you think about Hidden Hand? Well, what do you think about the Camelot something or other that is so full of conspiracy theories? Well, fortunately, if they come to the Bring Forth site, they're going to find a lot of people who have been through all of that, who've read that material and come to an opinion about it, and will look at it through the lens of the Law of One and say, well, you know, this and this and this, that's in common with the Law of One, and then we can contrast that material to the Law of One material, and you can see the difference in the polarity, the difference in the purity and whatnot. I don't like to get involved in those discussions because people know my voice now, and I would not want to be interfering with people's free will by saying, well, I don't like so-and-so at all. I just prefer not to do that because you never know what channel is going to hit what seeker with the information that he needs for now, and I don't want to interfere with that. But I will admit that there's a lot of false information out there. There's a lot of deceptive information. There's a lot of trickery. There's a lot of distraction. There's a lot of mixed polarity. So, you know, you really have to read and then sort of build your own intelligence, build your own opinions. I think that people need a place to talk about these things. But everybody that posts to our forums knows that our preference is that we focus our opinions through the lens of the Law of One. And we have lots of posters that are extremely good at doing that. So it would be like being in the world of fashion and having people talk about bringing back the new look of Dior in the 50s or something like that. Well, you're just going to have that because people that love fashion are going to remember the good old days and are going to be off, you know, in the past, be off in things that we don't particularly think of when we think of fashion today. But where are they going to have a satisfying conversation about the new look of the 50s, if not with other people that are in the world of clothing? So it's a perfect place to go, and you can't keep people from asking the questions that are on their minds. And it's a matter of maturity. If somebody has been reading for 20 years in this field, they've gone down all the blind alleys. They've backed out again, and they can tell you about that. So I think it's a great thing that people bring their questions. But they have to understand, and I think people that post to our site do understand, that there's an inevitability about the lens being that of the Lot One. With that caveat, I think it's a great thing, and I don't think it's a negative. I think people need a place to talk about this stuff.
Okay, and to our listeners, you are listening to In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Reckert from LL Research. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. Be sure to press the 1 key. Carla, our next question is from Inns Intium. Hi, Carla. I just wanted to tell you that I deeply appreciate everything you've done and are doing in service. I have a two-part question about love and the heart. The first part is about the open heart and the heart of the self. I'd like to ask, what have you come to know these two things as, from your personal experience and that as told by the Confederation? What is one looking for as one seeks these things? How does one know how well he or she is doing? Are the two related? Are they the same? The second part is about seeking the love in the present moment. What is it that you look for? Do you see things in a special way? In your experience, what is it that you have found, generally speaking, when you have found the love in the moment? Has it ever been something approaching the second distortion? Thank you. Blessings be to you. This is from Inns Intium.
Okay, Inns. Blessings be to you also. What a lovely thing to offer. Okay. First of all, I have not used the phrase the heart of self in at all the same way as I use the open heart. But they do come to much the same thing. And let me express the difference as briefly as I can. If you keep an open heart, it just means that your energy body's chakras are relaxed. You're enjoying being alive on Earth. You're enjoying your relationships. You're happy to be here. And you're at peace with yourself and with the world. And so your heart opens, because the energy of the Creator is moving through it without any contraction from the lower chakras to keep the energy out of the heart. So the heart is getting all this good energy. And, of course, the energy is love light. The energy of the Infinite Creator is love, with light mismatched to it so that a physical universe manifests. The light is the manifester of the love of the Creator. So you are a creature of love. The root of your being is love. The heart of self is love. Consciousness is love. And we all share that consciousness. We have that in common. And because of that, we are completely interrelated. We are one. That's the law of one. But when you talk about the heart of self, you're really talking not just about the open heart, but you're talking about who you really are. And who you really are is a part of the creative principle. You're a very young co-creator. You can co-create your creation. And that brings me to part two. how do you find the love in the moment? What are you looking for? Or how does it make you feel? And have I ever experienced the love in the moment to the point of experiencing the logos? I'll answer that part first. I have indeed. I'm a mystic, and I never know when it's going to hit, but I'll just be taken away into a place of light. And sometimes I'm in the light, sometimes I am the light. But in both, it's a very subtle distinction. But sometimes I disappear completely and I'm just light. Other times I'm a witness to the light. That's the difference. So in either of those states, I am experiencing the logos. And it is a wonderful thing to experience because it's so obvious that all is absolute perfection. I don't prepare for those moments and minutes and sometimes hours, and I wouldn't know how to tell you to prepare for them. What I do, and I do this 24/7, Russian person may not know that. I do that all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is to check in on myself, to be attentive to the way my mind is working. And if I'm not at peace in my heart, if something is on my mind, if something's niggling at me or worrying at me, then I do inner work. I sing a hymn. I do a chant. Just keep chanting it over and over to myself. It might be something I sing, something I say. I can pray. These are all techniques that can be employed as you do your day. It doesn't cut into your day. It doesn't keep you from being active in the world. As a matter of fact, it helps you be effective in the world. But I ask of myself that I am dwelling in joy, gratitude, and thankfulness, and I am remembering who I am and why I came here. I don't want to miss a minute, you know. I want to be involved in my day, attentive to it, and just remembering what a great thing it is to wake up in the Creator's universe and be able to serve right here, right now. So I do that all the time. And it's no big deal as far as what it looks like from the outside. It doesn't show. But I just keep asking myself to remember, to be in a state of remembrance as to who I am, whose I am, because I'm a mystical Christian. So I am, you know, a servant of the love and the light of the Creator, but I look at the life and the teachings of Jesus the Christ, and I love Jesus the Christ with all my heart. He is my beloved. And so I ask of myself that I am consciously living this moment as the person that I truly am, as the person that I've found over and over again through the years as I meditate, as I get in situations, life situations, where you really learn a lot about yourself sometimes really fast, that this is who I am. So I just try to be that. And as to how you tell when there's love in the moment, you basically ask yourself, are you feeling it? Are you feeling love in the room? Are you feeling love in the situation? A lot of times the answer to that is a big resounding no, I am not. And those are the moments that are your glory, because those are the moments where you can make a decision to be the love in the moment, not of yourself, but just to allow that love light to flow through you and just ask, you know, if there's anything I can do to make the situation sweeter. And then usually when you're attentive like that, you'll see a place where either you're there, you're holding the light, and it changes people, or you find that somebody asks you a question, that there's some legitimate way to get into the situation without storming in and fixing things, you know, without being asked, which is not, that's a no-no. But you just let yourself be part of that situation, and you love with all your heart, and you wait for guidance to say, okay, now you could drop a seed right there. You could drop a seed of love right there and make the situation sweeter for everybody. Because people feel that energy of love. Even if you don't say anything, they'll feel it either consciously or subconsciously. and it'll make a difference to them.
Our last question tonight, Carla, kind of extends that previous question. We have probably about 10 minutes left. So the last question is from Matthew. And I can relate to this question myself, actually, because of a situation I'm going through right now. So I can relate to what Matthew's saying. He says, many times I have felt the impulse to make a change in the form of service I offer. At first, I observe confirmations as though this was a good decision. But then, after I take up my new path, I experience an apparent deficiency of others willing to receive the service offered. Would you comment on the nature of these experiences and offer suggestions for improved connectivity with others in regards to services offered?
Okay, Matthew, I don't want to discourage you, but you've got the cart before the horse when it comes to service. What you want to do is wake up every morning and dedicate your day to the Creator. Make it clear that you're the Creator's servant, but that you need guidance. And then you go about your day. You don't think, okay, where's an opportunity for me to be of service and how can I be of service? You don't wear your mind out thinking about what your path of service is going to be. You wait for the next person to ask you something. Or you wait for the next situation in which you can see, oh, there's a hungry person over there needs some soup. I better go make some soup. You do things that do not infringe on other people's free will. And you're not sitting there going, okay, now the measure of the success of my service is if everybody that I offer the service to takes it. Rather, you create of yourself a lighthouse. And your service is that you are keeping your energy body open, you're keeping your heart open, you're moving from a place of love. So that you've contacted consciousness, the consciousness that lies beneath the level of the surface mind. The consciousness that we all have in common is, of course, a consciousness made of love. So you've got a lot of guidance right in your heart. And you just keep that heart open. And when you see, uh-oh, I got triggered, I got cut off in traffic or whatever, I need to do a little inner work to open my heart again. You just keep going back to that open-hearted situation where you know that the love light of the Creator is just flowing through you, and you bless that energy as it flows through you so that it's colored with your love and your personality, but it's still the Creator's light. And you create this beautiful lighthouse, this beacon, so that people who are on stormy waters will see you and might be able to get some help from you in one way or another. And then you see what life offers you. I've had a lot of different jobs in my life. When I was in college, I had, you know, jobs like barmaid and salesperson, and I was a Howard Johnson's hostess welcoming people to the motel. I found just as much service in those jobs, if not more, than I found later in life when I was a teacher, and then I was a librarian, and then I was a researcher, and then I was a channel. It doesn't matter what you do. You can't fail to be of service if your heart is open and you're just pumping that love light of the Creator through your system and out into the world. You're holding the space for the light. That's what you came here to do. The outer services will come to you. And if something dries up that you thought was a good direction for you and you put a lot into it and apparently it's not selling, well, sit down with yourself and ask yourself, did this feel right to do? Is this something that I want to do for a lifetime? And if so, don't worry about how you're going over. I mean, Monica and I have been doing this show for a month now, and I think we've gotten two callers. You know, we ask each other, is anybody listening? But then we realize if one is illuminated, are not all illuminated? So we're illuminating each other, so how can we fail? So you just need to focus your attention on the purity of your willingness to serve. And then let the Creator make a niche for you to fit in. I had no idea when I began channeling in 74 that it was going to end up being the center of my service. I know now, in hindsight, but at the time I was doing it strictly because Don asked me to, and we were partners, and I understood his desire to keep the grand experiment going and seeing what we could get from extraterrestrial contact. So I learned, and things developed in a way that surprised me, and it still surprises me in a delightful way, and I am so thrilled that somehow this service has found me. Did I think when I was a kid that I was going to be a channel? No. I thought at first I was going to be a doctor. Then I had a brief visit to the nunnery. You know, I read Albert Schweitzer's book, and I thought, I want to go and be a nursing doctor, a nun in Africa, and take care of all the people that seemingly civilization has forgotten. Then I thought, well, no, I'll go into politics. I'll be a diplomat or somebody in the State Department. I'll help at the nation state level, because it was obvious to me that there weren't a lot of people in national politics that were focusing on what poor people needed, what disadvantaged people needed, what people need that aren't wealthy or, you know, in the middle class, the working class, and below that. These are people too, and they aren't being listened to or cared for, and I just wanted to address that. And then I discovered what politics was really like, and I realized, A, I can't lie. B, I can't stand committee meetings. I'm in the wrong place. So then I was going to be an English professor until I discovered, oh, my God, you can relate anything to anything, and words are basically an illusion. So I became a librarian, and then Don hired me away from library service to work in research. So you can't choose your service. You just have to choose to be of service and then see what life hands you. And in whatever it hands you, if all you're doing is sorting Xerox copies, you can make a great meditation out of sorting Xerox copies. Good luck. You will be of service.
Gosh, that could have come in so handy back when I was sitting in a little cubicle in an office for so many years wondering, is this it? So, gosh, those words would have really helped at that time. So good to hear that. I'm sure there's a lot of people still in that situation. Carla, we are pretty much out of time. Did you have any last brief closing comments?
I don't, except thank you so much for writing in and asking questions. It just warms Monica's and my hearts to the perfection to get a good question. And I do want to say, you know, I'm not the be-all and end-all. I make a lot of mistakes, and I probably pull boners all the time that I don't even catch. But the heart behind it is certainly open and full of love. So thank you for asking these questions, and I promise anything you ask, I will do my best to take a whack at it. So ask away.
Yes, thank you to all the people that submitted questions, and you can, anyone else that would like to submit a question, please go to Bring Forth Forums, that's bringforth.org, bring4th.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions, or you can submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com, that's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and, of course, bringforth.org, which is our community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, and in the meantime, please be sure to visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com. For crystalline water, the missing piece for radiant health for wanderers and humans alike. That's waternurtureslife.com. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Liel. We will be here next Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, January 28th. See you then.